This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Welcome to the final hour here of In the Box here on TSN 1200, and we'll begin it by going to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline and bringing in the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa Senators, Dean Brown. Dean, good afternoon. Long time no talk.
Yeah, I know. It's like we're dating, for heaven's sakes.
Hey, oh, man.
Hey, CJ, how are you, bud?
I'm good, man.
Well, Dino, let's start with some Senators content over at the World Hockey Championships. Did you watch Drake Batherson lead Team Canada to a come-from-behind 4-3 overtime victory over Sweden to advance to the semis at the World Championships?
Yep, I was watching it, and I was as shocked as anybody, let's be honest. You know, you're sitting there watching Canada losing 3-0, and you're going, wow, this is over. Yeah, especially when you think back to the two losses they suffered during the round robin to the countries they lost to. You go, wow, this Canadian team just doesn't have it. You know, just no way they're coming back against a team as good as Sweden. Linus Ullmark is playing really well in goal, and, you know, just didn't see it coming. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 they outshoot them in the third. They badly outplay them in the third, score 3 goals, tie it, go to overtime, tripping penalty. Batherson scores the winner. It's like, what, this is a script that if you wrote the script, people would go, come on, no one's going to believe that. But it was fantastic. It was fun to watch.
We always get into these discussions about what this can mean to the future development of a player, right? And I know sometimes it gets downplayed, whatever. I just think what a great experience for guys like Chabot and particularly Batherson to have played such a massive role in that comeback. To me, I look at something like this and some people will say, oh, it's just the World Championships. The best guys aren't even there. I think that's wonderful for Batherson and that experience that he's going to bring back with him, that being part of a team that was down and came back and that he played such a massive role in doing that. I have to think that that helps him down the road. Don't you think?
Yeah, it does. It does, CJ. I agree with you in the sense that anything that you do on the ice in a different venue, in a different area, adds to your toolbox of experiences you've been through. You know, what you said is true. And when people say it, it's true. It's not a best on best tournament. Best guys aren't there for sure. It's not the Olympics. Yeah, everybody knows that for sure. But, you know, if you have a really good week in the weight room and, you know, during your summer training and you break all your personal bests, is that not important to your development as a player too? They're all building
for sure.
Blocks. They're all things that you add to your toolbox of experiences that are going to help you in some way. And I can't tell you, you know, which situation today's game-winning goal for Drake Batherson might help him. But it will. Anything that's positive, anything that's a positive thing, or something, a different experience that you haven't had before that you add to the toolbox, makes you a better player. It just does. And the fact that it's not best on best is irrelevant. To me, that doesn't matter. There's certainly the hype and the talk about a play like that, if it were to happen in the Olympics, would get a lot more talk because it is a best on best if it were in the Olympics or the World Cup or, you know, Stanley Cup final or something, for sure. But I'm not sure that it is any bigger or any smaller than any of the other experiences you have. I think it really is guy to guy, you know, like an experience in a Stanley Cup final is something that helps you be more prepared for the next Stanley Cup final you know, the next big playoff, even if you lost it. That's the thing. You know, well, we didn't lose anything because they lost. No, that's not true. You know, so I agree with you. In this case, yeah, okay, you can poo-poo it, not a best on best, for sure. But don't tell me that it doesn't add to the toolbox a player carries forward with him in his career, because it does.
I think, just to finish on that thought, like, I love comparing it to golf, because you can go and practice as many 3, 4, and 5 footers as you want on the practice green. And that will help you technically in terms of knowing what you need to do. But until you get in those situations where, you know, let's go right to the end of the spectrum and say, now you've got a 5 footer to win the Masters, you know, having talked to a bunch of players over the years, Nothing can prepare you for that except being in that moment. Mm-hmm. You can roll 500 five-footers on the practice green. Nothing is going to prepare you for the way your mind is going to be racing, the changes in the way that you're breathing, you know, all of those things. And that's why I think these experiences are important, because the only way to get the experience is to live through it. And I think that's, you know, for Batherson and Chabot to be a part of this, I think is a positive for them, because there's no other preparation for being in those moments than having the experience of being in those moments, and to know how your thinking reacts, how your body reacts, how your nerves react. You know, if I'm going to draw a parallel with the golf thing again, just knowing how your body is going to respond to those situations, so that you can take that feedback for the next time and understand, if you weren't successful, why that happened and what changes you need to make in terms of coping with that different environment.
And to put it on a parallel with the world championships in hockey, as it relates to a best on best like the Olympics, you make that putt in an event on the Corn Ferry Tour, and that comes back to help you 2 years later on a PGA
Tour.
Sure
it does.
Don't tell me they aren't connected just because the Corn Ferry Tour is not the PGA Tour. They are connected. They're absolutely connected. You know?
At that time, you're right. At that time, it's the most important putt you're probably going to make in your life. So
certainly is that day, especially if a guy's trying to make a cut. You know what I mean? Like just because the tournament itself is not the same level of another tournament doesn't mean that moment isn't more important than something else.
I think for me, if just speaking, Batherson is now he knows he's at his comfort level, because coming back from that high ankle sprain, I think down the stretch he didn't look like himself. Like, he was on an absolute tear. He was becoming a star in the league when that minor league goaltender took his legs out. And for me, that when he came back, obviously encouraging, but now, even at the start of the Worlds, he wasn't the same Drake that we saw in the first 30 games of the regular season. And now I think he's starting to look like that player again. So maybe just personally for Batherson, he can now enter the offseason whenever it ends up being, and know that he could be back at that level to start the season.
There's no way to put it on a graph and say this is what happens and this is how it affects a guy and every guy's the same guy. But if you want a comparison, I can't tell you exactly how, because you'd have to be able to get into his mind. And in some cases, you know, even in your own mind, you don't really know. You just know it's made an effect. But I don't think anybody would contend that the way Nick Paul played last year in the World Championships didn't help Nick Paul this year and now where he is now.
Yep.
Now, can I tell you exactly which neutrons are firing in a different way? No, I can't. But it was an experience, a great experience for him that he's put in the toolbox, and he was the best player he's ever been as an Ottawa Senator this year. And now you see him in the playoffs with Tampa, and he's the best version of himself. And I'm not saying that's because he went to the World Championships, but that is definitely, part of what's made him a better player. What he learned about himself in that tournament has helped him become who he is today.
Yeah. It's that feeling of just knowing I can do it.
Yeah.
I did it, and I can do it again. It's almost like one tremendous hurdle, mental hurdle that you don't have to overcome. That knowledge that in those biggest moments which demand the most of you, that you managed to do it before, and now I can do it again. And it, like I said, Creature and I were talking earlier about, you know, teams blowing those 3-0 leads. I mean, so much of it is just your approach and your mindset, right? Like, and it's just human nature. You got a lead, you kind of sit back and try and protect it, which it winds up being the worst thing you can do. I always love that expression from football, right? What's the only thing prevent defense prevents is winning. And, I agree. So I just think these experiences, not to make too much of them, but I just think it's a tremendous thing for players to draw upon down the stretch when they find themselves in similar circumstances.
Agreed.
Just to move the conversation along, but keep it Sens related for now, Dean, our tool and equipment store web pool question of the day asks, based on Pierre Dorion's comments, what should the Senators do with the number 7 pick? And the options are make the pick, trade the pick for a top 6 forward, as Pierre said that he's going to try to do in terms of adding a top 6, or trade for the top 4D, as Mr. Pierre Dorion said that he'd like to try to do as well. So what are you choosing out of those three options?
Well, I guess if I had to choose, I would say that, which way would I choose? I think I would choose an emphasis on the top six forward. Because while maybe not at the start of camp, I think the Senators, you know, may have the answer to their own question within their fold right now. You know, who knows? You know, Lassie Thompson could be, maybe not today, the start of the, you know, but I think if I had to put them in order, and you can, you know, you have to put them in the area of what's going to be the hardest one to get, so go after that first. I think getting a top six forward might not be as easy as getting a top four defenseman. I think if I had to say one or the other, you know, I think the plan obviously is, after hearing from Pierre yesterday, the plan is to do all of them. But, you know, if you can't get to all of them and you have to make a priority list, I think I would say probably a top six forward. Mm. This team has to score more goals. This team has to be better offensively. They've got some great offensive weapons, no doubt about it. But this team, you know, if you look at teams that make the playoffs and are successful by and large, they're teams whose goals against is under three and their goals for is over three. And, you know, Ottawa made strides in getting their goals against down last year, and it's obviously nowhere close to perfect, but they made strides. But you have to, during the regular season, be able to, on average, score above three. You know, we found out with Florida, being the highest scoring team in the league doesn't matter in the playoffs, but yeah, you got to get to the playoffs. So I think right now these guys have made strides, and with better goaltending, I think that number defensively is going to keep going down. But I'm not sure, unless you add right away a top six forward, you can get that number above three in average goals per game. So I think I would go with that one.
You know me, I like to look at the numbers and just see precedents and thresholds for what makes a playoff team or not. Because to me, that leads you to come up with your priorities. And in fact, Ottawa scored more goals than two of the playoff teams in the Eastern Conference this year. They scored more goals than the Rangers, and they scored more goals than the Bruins. Where they didn't fare so well, obviously, was on the defensive side. And again, that's not, to me, it's not squarely on the goaltending. It's not squarely on the defenseman. It's a team. That's a team thing. But as you said, Dean, there was positive movement this year. They ended up at minus 39 for their goal differential, which, you know, clearly Eastern Conference was divided into the haves and the have-nots this year, right? You had the eight teams with 100 points and the other eight with not 100 points. And in terms of goal differential, to me, the positive trend is that Ottawa had the best goal differential of the have-nots. So there definitely was positive movement in terms of that number there. And they're now at the point now where I think less important, I think, is scoring more goals. More important is stopping them. They still need to cut off about a half a goal a game from mm-hmm. their goals against average to get into that area where you're about a break even team, which now lets you be, as history tells us, part of the playoff situation. Now, getting a top six, you know, getting a top six forward isn't necessarily counter that. If you increase your offense, which means you've got the puck more often, that can also help you play better defense in terms of you've got the puck, the other guys don't. So I'm not saying that absolutely the decision has to be a top 4D, because they need to cut their goals against, and maybe that's where a top 4D helps you the most. If you can get a top 6D, or excuse me, a top 6 forward, then maybe having the puck more, drawing more penalties, all those things can also help you cut down the goals against. But I think the goals against absolutely has to remain the top priority for this team going into next season. And to me, that means all the pressure is on the GM to give the coach the assets he needs to be able to make that happen. But to me, all the pressure going into next year is on the coach in terms of coming up with a better plan in terms of getting this team to play better team defense.
Last night, Nate MacKinnon was a man possessed, a hat trick. He could have had about 10 points in last night's game. He was electric, but it was the Blues coming back from 3-0 down and 4-3 late in the third period to win it 5-4 in overtime and force a game six. What are your takeaways from that game last night, Dean?
I was amazed at the time when I was watching it that St. Louis got up off the mat. The reason I thought that at the time was that goal that Nate MacKinnon scored from goal line to goal line, that, especially in the playoffs, can be so demoralizing where it just takes all the fight out of a bench. And that's usually what happens, especially when that kind of goal gives you the lead that late in the game. That usually breaks a team's back when he basically skates through the entire team and scores, you know. And it didn't. And that's the thing that surprised me the most. And so, you know, after they proved that they were not crushed by that, then it's a coin toss game. It becomes a coin toss game again. They won the coin toss. I still don't think they're a better team than Colorado, but it became a coin toss game. But that was something that I found at the time really amazing, that St. Louis wasn't crushed by that goal. I was really surprised because, you know, when it happened, it wasn't just that, you know, when he scored, you look how much time's left, you go, well, they can't catch up. That wasn't even in my mind was, how do you go back out for the next shift and go, okay, guys, we got them where we want them. Like, no, you don't. He just skated through your entire team and scored what is probably right now, if not the best playoff goal so far in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, maybe one or two of the Connor McDavid goals would be in the same class. But, you know, you watch that goal, that could be the goal of the year in the NHL, for heaven's sakes. And they got back up off the mat and they got a goal and they got to, you know, like, so I think that was probably the biggest thing. I like I said, I still think that, you know, Colorado is a better team. But I got a lot of respect for St. Louis to get up off the mat and keep playing after watching him do that to them.
It makes you think, too, you know, just going back to our prior topic about how much did the fact that they won the Stanley Cup in 2019 help them last night? Like that they've been through tough situations before. You don't win a cup. You don't get 16 wins in the postseason without going through a lot of stuff. And I was thinking that last night too. I was like, okay, well, yes, the team changes and a bunch of players have moved on from that Stanley Cup winning team. But the coach is there and there's still some personalities on that team that were there in 2019. And that's what I was thinking last night was, you know, there's an example of a team of the champion status that's going to be tough to put away. And what a game in terms of the ebbs and flows of it. So MacKinnon makes that, like you said, Dean, the goal of the playoffs. And we would be talking of it much differently, right? If that had stood up as the winner, like that, you know, it was a great goal. No question. It would be, if that had stood up as the winner, it would be legendary status, even as of today, less than 24 hours later. Mm-hmm. But what the game can do. So he scores that goal and then he's on the ice trying to preserve the win and just commits a horrendous giveaway down near the goal line. He tries to backhand the puck behind his own net. Puck gets turned over. And then the Blues wind up scoring shortly after to tie the game. Nick Leddy, the guy who got turned inside out by MacKinnon for the goal. I'm not going to say he's going to wear the goat horns at that point. It was a fantastic play by MacKinnon. And I thought Bieksa made a great point in the commentary saying that somehow they got switched up. So the lefty wound up on the right side and isn't really in a strong position with his stick to defend that outside play. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to defend that play, you've got to turn your body or you've only got one hand on your stick as a lefty on the right-hand side. So he was in a little bit of an unfortunate situation. Regardless of the circumstances that led to him being there. And he gets beat, you know, for that spectacular goal, which will be replayed forever. And then he makes just that fantastic keep in at the blue line where the puck comes off of the boards and he uses his foot to keep it in. and then moves the puck and they score. So it's just, to me, it was like one of those things where here you had MacKinnon that made that spectacular play and then he commits the turnover, and you had Nick Leddy who got beat, and then he comes back and makes that fantastic play to keep the puck alive in the Edmonton zone, which leads to the goal, the winning goal. And it's just, to me, I was looking at that and I was thinking, man, that is hockey. Like, 1 minute you're riding high or you're riding low, and the next minute the role is switched.
Yeah. And isn't that what makes Tampa so hard to beat in these situations? You know, you switch teams. I'm not sure that, you know, who knows, but I'm not sure that Tampa gives up that goal, you know, just because what Tampa has learned with all the skill they have and everything, but they still learned how to lock it down. When it's time to shut the game down, no more comebacks, no more track meets, no more. And they just do it. That's what they do, you know? And, you know, one of the reasons I think why a team like Colorado hasn't been able to get over the hump is just like that. With all the skill, all the speed, all the other stuff they have, there's still too many situations like that where being able to play a certain way in a game and be able to be rock solid in that approach is still not part of their game yet, you know. And I think Colorado obviously learned something last night about putting people away, but you know, you compare that to a team like Tampa, and Tampa's, you know, older and, you know, not the fastest team in the league anymore. You know, Colorado, if they were to meet in the final with Tampa, Colorado, far quicker team, all those things. But those key things that you have to be able to do in the playoffs in certain situations, Tampa are experts at it. They are, you know, they just, you know, if Tampa were playing that game last night, do you think St. Louis gets a sniff? Now, Tampa might not get another scoring chance, but they can keep it. They can keep it even. They can keep it 50-50 for minute after minute after minute after minute, no matter how frantic you are. They can keep it 50-50. And that's teams like that. That's all they need. They just need 50-50 and not have it budge. It never budges off 50-50. And Colorado is, you know, like you said, they're still trying to make plays with a lead, and here we go, and let's make it a 100-mile-an-hour game again. And that's all good, but you do have to be able to lock it down if you want to win a Stanley Cup. And I think Colorado probably learned a pretty valuable lesson last night about what you have to do to lock it down, because they didn't achieve that anywhere close to it.
Well, that's where the, you know, the coach is having a philosophy, Dean, in Graham, about the, you know, how to play in those situations. And here are our rules. Okay. When you've got the puck in this area of the ice, this is what you do. Doesn't guarantee anything, but again, history will show you that making that play in that part of the ice at that time, and with that score, you're putting the odds in your favor. And that's all a coach can do in terms of coming up with a game plan and a philosophy of playing given the score and the clock, that all we want to do is try and put the odds in our favor. Sometimes a MacKinnon's going to grab the puck or a McDavid's going to grab the puck and go end to end or beat two guys or make a fantastic shot from in close to win. And all you can do is tip your hat to them. It's going to happen. Yep. Sometimes talent wins out. But to your point, Dean, that's the key for coaches is, Here are our rules. And when the puck is here, this is what we need. This is what we need to do to give us the best chance of winning. And if the other team makes a spectacular play to beat us, then that's the way it goes. But I think that's, you make a good point about Tampa, because it just seems like we know what we need to do to close out a game. Yeah. And, you know, there's probably not a bigger compliment, right, then that you can give a team is the old ABC, always be closing.
I was talking to Brian Engblom about this a while ago, and I was asking him, because it's too simple a thing just to say all the stuff that Tampa learned after they got bounced in the first round and swept by Columbus. But when you ask the specific, and I asked Brian Engblom, I said, specifically, and he said probably the single biggest thing is that John Cooper, after that loss, was able to convince the high skill players on that team that in important games, sometimes there isn't a play to be made. Because he made the point that it's hard to convince a guy like Stamkos or Kucherov, you know, players of that level, that sometimes the play is off the glass and out and we'll regroup and try and stop them at the blue line again. Because guys like that always think they can make a play. And that's when it gets dangerous in your own zone, when you think you can make a play. And so Engblom, his point was that that Columbus loss finally made guys, the higher skill guys, understand that this is not about you not using your skill. It's about knowing when the skill is to choose something different that's safer for the team. That is, yeah, it's not, you putting it off the glass is not going to make a highlight reel. But every play is not a play you have to make. You have to make a play for the team. And Engblom contends that, you know, that is kind of when things switch. It kind of reminded me of, you know, all the lore about Steve Yzerman. When Detroit started winning is when Steve Yzerman started playing a different way, when he, you know, got it, that it, yeah, you know, yeah. There's not a play every time just because I'm a special player. Sometimes that's not it. And it feeds through the team. You know, when the team sees, you know, Steven Stamkos pinning the puck against the boards and having guys spearing him and
blocking,
hitting
him. Blocking shots.
Yeah, and blocking shots. Then they go, everybody's in. We're all in. All the big guys have bought in. And that's when your team's changed. That's when Tampa changed. And I just, in that regard, I don't think Colorado is there yet. Now, they're still a great team, and I still think they're going to come out of the West. But, you know, maybe what happened last night helps them learn that. Maybe that's what helps them learn that. But if you want to point to Tampa and find out what turned the corner, it was a lot like the Yzerman thing. It's when the best guys understood that they have to be the biggest part of lockdown. And it's not about, it's no longer about their skill. It's their willingness to do the ugly work. And they've learned that the ugly work leads to Stanley Cups. And they're all in now. They bought in. And I don't know if they can go all the way, but they know how to lock it down. And you need to have that skill if you want to win in the playoffs.
McDavid having an unreal playoff, taking his game to another level, both offensively, where he's got 25 points to start his playoff in just 11 games. And also defensively, where he's grown in his own zone too. The Oilers have a 3-1 series lead over the Flames. Have they learned? Do you think that Edmonton's prepared to lock it down and advance to the Western Conference Final?
Boy, that's a great question, Creature. I don't know if they can, because their version of lockdown is just have McDavid skate around with the puck and no one can take it from him for 2 minutes. You know what I mean, like that's their lockdown. it's not so much stopping the other guys. You know, that series is so funny. You know, when you and I talked to John Shannon yesterday, it's kind of like, what are we talking about here? The best goalie in the series is the guy who gave up a 138-foot goal. You know, and that's the best goal. That's the better of the two goalies in the series. You know, it's like, there's catastrophically bad plays mixed in with some unbelievably historic offense that just can't be matched. And the fact that somehow, and this is the part that I never thought I would see in this series, somehow the Oilers have got Calgary trying to play their style of game, which they can't. But, you know, I don't think I was the only one to say that the structure and the balance and the overall better depth that Calgary has as a team over Edmonton will be the thing that shines through in this series. And it isn't, and it hasn't been. And that's the thing I think that's kind of surprising to me. It's not the dominance of McDavid and Draisaitl and the historic runs they're having, or the goaltending, where the guy who gets caught out of the net for important goals and gives one up from 138 feet is the best goaltender in the series. That tells you how bad the goaltending's been. But for me, it's the fact that, you know, Calgary is not playing Calgary Flames hockey. They've been lured into trying to play the Oilers style of game, and that's not good for them.
Well, and it doesn't help that your goaltender, who was brilliant through the regular season, hasn't been at the top of his game either, right?
Yeah.
And we forget, I think I was certainly looking at this going into this year and the way Calgary had played and the way that they'd been able to play defense, looked at the Flames as a team that could go right to the Western Conference Final. But again, the Flames don't have a deep well of playoff success in recent history either, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
Edmonton looks like they're just playing like a team that was sick and tired, and their best guys, you know, Draisaitl, even though his mobility has been compromised. I mean, they just look like they're playing like a bunch that's tired of hearing the people say the things that they have about them.
Mm-hmm.
And McDavid looks like a guy on a mission, just that single-handedly he's gonna flip the script.
Yeah, and I think that may well be the case. It may well be the case. I just, it's not something I saw coming. I didn't think, you know, as sketchy as Edmonton has been defensively, I just didn't think with Calgary's balance, and I didn't think they'd have any kind of success over the longer term being able to contain Tkachuk and Gaudreau. And but they have. And I'm not sure if it's because those guys, have not gotten to the next level, have not gotten to the next gear, or whether, you know, they are being contained. I still have a hard time wrapping my head around the idea that Edmonton can contain anybody, because that's not really been a big part of their game for a very long time. So I'm not really sure which it is, but it's happening. And for Calgary, that's going to be the death of them. If they can't get their best players to be their best players and can't either up their game or break through whatever they're having to try and fight through, then this is going to be McDavid and Draisaitl dragging their team into round three.
Last game to kind of go over, or series to go over with you here, Dean. It's the Hurricanes and Rangers from Carolina tonight. That series tied 2 games apiece. Carolina is undefeated at home, and they also haven't won on the road. Do you have a feel for this one? Has this series captured your attention? Is it the least of your favorite series? Like, how do you view what you're expecting from the Hurricanes and Rangers this evening?
I think that the Rangers have done a very good job of frustrating Carolina and drawing them into the web of stupidity. Carolina's taken some dumb penalties. They've been drawn in, into doing some dumb things, into sabotaging, their own success. Again, you know, if you look at it top to bottom, Carolina is a better team, but you got to be able to, you have to be able to make that count when it matters most, which is now. And I think the Rangers have done a very good job of getting Carolina off of their game and getting them frustrated and angry and getting their coach frustrated and angry. I think the tension on that Carolina bench does mount, and it's a reflection of their coach when Rod Brind'Amour is on the bench, and we can all clearly see, and you know that his players are hearing it and they can see it, they're right there, when he is absolutely out of his mind about plays, about penalties, about non-calls, and he has just gotten wrapped out in a couple of these games, and I think that does feed down to his players. And I'm not saying that it gives them a green light to go do something dumb, but I think they're out there and they go, well, you know, if I go over the line here and do something, you know, what's the retribution? I know he's already mad about something that's not of his, you know. So I'm not sure, but the Rangers I think have done a very good job. Both verbally and in play and in, you know, some of the ways that they have taunted Carolina in this game, they have distracted Carolina from the things they do best and the things they do well. I don't know if you can push through and win a whole series doing that. I don't know if Carolina is going to not figure this out. Smart enough coaching staff and smart enough players to figure this out that, you know, that's part of what's going on here. But, you know, it's a best of three now. And so if you can't control yourself and walk away from some of that stuff to stay within your system and stay with what you want to do, then you're not disciplined enough to move on. And I think that might come down to the end of the road for Carolina. Are you disciplined enough to just ignore that stuff finally, get by it and just move on and do what you do best and make them have to play your game? If the Rangers have to play Carolina's game, they can't. It's Carolina's series to take. But the Rangers, you have to give them credit. They have been a very – Gerard Gallant has figured out all the pressure points, and he has been pushing them. And he's given, you know, D'Angelo the open gate, or his guys the open gate, you know, to go at D'Angelo and try and get him all frustrated. It's backfired. It's absolutely backfired, you know, like none of that stuff. It's made them better, you know, like, and so I don't know. I think if Carolina can't get themselves back to their game and ignore the other stuff and stop being sucked into it, then the Rangers are going to upset them. I still can't see that happening, because I just can't imagine them not straightening that out. But if they can't, then they can't beat the Rangers, and they will have been another one of those situations where, you know, you'll go, well, you know, the Rangers got to round three, they weren't the better team, but they're here, and that's the way the playoffs are. That's the way it should be. You know, if they found different buttons to push to give them an advantage, kudos to them. And right now, in my opinion, that's what's happening in that series. I don't think anybody thought this series would be a 2-2 series. You know, like, I don't think anybody said, oh, yeah, I can see that one going 6 or 7. I didn't hear many people saying that. So I think this is a little bit of a surprise for quite a few people. Wayne Gretzky said Carolina's walking through to the Stanley Cup final. Well, this isn't quite the walk that people were thinking it was going to be.
Well, and it just last thought from me, just, you know, goes to show you a guy like Ryan Reeves is just like he's bugging them and driving a bunch of the guys nuts. Him going after Domi there near the end of the game the other night. Like, he's a disruptor. And whatever you think about a guy like Reeves and his value in the regular season or whatever, like, I think of, you know, he's not Tom Wilson, but that kind of physical presence and doing that, it is a distraction. And I think Carolina has let him be a distraction. They're just not walking away.
Yes, I totally agree with that. It's the Patrick Maroon effect. Is Patrick Maroon a great player in Tampa? No, of course he isn't. But there is a role there that has an effect on another team. And you just go, how can they be falling for this? But they do. They are. They can, you know, and you're absolutely right. Reeves, with the minutes he gets, and it's not very much, he is very effective at making people play not nearly their best hockey because they're mad at him or frustrated or angry or whatever. And that helps his team. And that's his only job, to help his team. And you can debate whether, you know, like you said, whether you think in the regular season there's value in having a player like that. Well, right now there's a value.
Right on, Dino. Appreciate the extended visit today. And hope you have a rest of your day. A good rest of your day.
All right, boys. It's been fantastic. And as always, thanks for calling.
There goes our Sens insider, the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa Senators, Dean Brown, on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. We'll take a break, come back, and potentially wrap things up. See what Kenny says on the other side as In the Box continues on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, welcome back to In the Box here on TSN 1200. Final segment of an abbreviated show for CJ and I. And coming up next on The Drive, it's the return of Lever Sage, as well as Mr. First Pitch, Aaron John Jakubek, and I'm sure those fellas will have some opinion and potential updates on the CFL and the CFLPA labor negotiation, as the CFL looking for an answer from the Players Association by midnight tonight. The Red Blacks supposed to play a exhibition game against the Argonauts tomorrow. Will that end up taking place? See. I know AJ CJ on Tuesday was optimistic. He thought that that game would be played, but obviously that's 2 days ago now. So we're a lot closer to the deadline, which is later tonight at midnight. So interested to see their take on if they think that the game's going to be played tomorrow and what they think of the current negotiations and the status of it.
Yeah. I would love to know what the internal dynamics are within the CFLPA right now, because the first thing I thought when I saw one of the offers from the owners, you know, the one that basically was making American players Canadian for all intents and purposes after 3 years with the same team or 5 years in the league, is you're basically phasing the true Canadian players out of the game, right? I mean, and I understand completely why the owners want to do it. The salaries of Canadian players in the CFL are artificially inflated because it's a small pool from which to draw from, relatively speaking. So I completely understand the owners wanting to take some of the negotiating power away from the Canadians. But I saw that, and the first thing I thought as a fan of the CFL is I don't want to see the impact of true Canadian players reduced in the CFL. That's part of what makes the CFL for me. And I can understand why the Canadian players would certainly be against it, because the writing would be on the wall as more and more of those American players became faux Canadians. For roster reasons, there would be less bargaining position for the Canadians, and Canadians would slowly be, you know, have their impact reduced. So I get it. and we'll see what the compromise is. But I would like to know, you know, what the give and take is within the Players Association right now and how important that issue is for them.
CJ, one of my favorite things here at the station is a pop by. Not to be confused with Popeyes, although our pop by guest is holding a Popeyes bag right now. And it's the man I teed up. He's back from vacation, the well-rested Lever Sage, nice, who is hosting the drive next. And he wanted to come in and say hello to Chris Stevenson, who he's been away from his own show for some time. Hello, Lever Sage.
Hello, Graham. Hello, Christopher. How are you?
Hello, Lee. I'm looking forward. We're going to team up tomorrow on the drive.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you. I'm hoping that we are going to team up, and that will be a... It's always good times. I heard you talking about the CFL, and yeah, always good times. Yeah, I well rested. got home last night. Still no power at the place.
Oh, really?
Which is, you know, hey, we're lucky to kind of be away and understanding what everyone's been through. It, you know, that's the least of the concerns, but... It's, yeah, I mean, what a time you guys have been on here the last little while. So, yeah, it's nice to be back and a full 4 hours with AJ. I'm glad. Usually it would be the opposite way around, Chris and Graham and Kenny, but it was AJ that told me, because I was away, right? Like, I just wasn't checking much, and you try and when you get away, you try and get away. And I think I said, see you at 3:30 tomorrow, AJ, or this morning. He's like, no, the show's at 2:00. Like, oh, I had no idea.
You thought Canada was playing in the
Well, yeah, just the last game. Schedule I had looked was, you know. But AJ told me to be on time, so I showed up on time.
I thought you were going to say it was normally you that would bring it up, but AJ brought up the pitch. I thought that's where you were going with that, not the
show. Oh, the pitch. Now,
he actually didn't take much.
Okay, this is what I was going to ask, because all I have done is now... I have seen the video.
Did you prior to today? Like,
yes.
Okay. I didn't know if you had or not.
Yep. I saw the video. Now, I will tell you that for the 3 or 4 days before that, and I'll eagerly await both of your responses on this, he was kind of like, my shoulder's bugging me. Like, I can't really rotate my shoulder. I'm worried about the first pitch. Like, he had some concerns. Now, after watching the pitch, I understand completely why he had a lot of concerns. But how much should I be giving to him at this point? Chris?
This goes back to our earlier discussion. You can, you know, try loosening up the shoulder and practice all you want. But now when you're out there and all those eyeballs are on you, mm-hmm, I would be interested to know how much of that affected the performance as well.
Okay.
Now if you got a physical limitation, that's gonna complicate things, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Would AJ ever tell anybody that it was the bright lights that got him?
No.
So I have to be wary and when and how I ask him.
That doesn't lead, you know, prevent me from speculating that he choked.
Yes. Well, I think you'll hear, if he hasn't taken much so far, I will ask him.
He hasn't taken much. Honestly, I thought it was going to be pretty bad. I listened to the entire morning show yesterday. They brought it up. They were a little playful, but he didn't take it. There are two alternate angles to the pitch that haven't been released yet.
Mm.
Wasn't on the 6:00 news. So he hasn't taken too much. And I do feel bad. I was there. We both thought we were throwing. Like, we went to the ballpark.
So you didn't throw?
No, I didn't throw.
Oh, okay.
So, like, we got there. We played catch before our show because AJ was concerned. So we warmed up before the drive. And then we went down, like, right before we were supposed to go out in the field. And we were told that one of us and one of the Bose creators would be throwing out the pitch. And I asked AJ, what do you want to do? It's your show.
So he took it upon himself.
Hang on. I'm telling you the story. So I asked him, it's your show. What do you want to do? And he's like, well, what do you want to do? So I text JR. I was like, who do you want to throw it? He said, you guys decide. So then AJ said, let's flip a coin. So he's like, coin decide. He's like, heads, it's me. Tails, it's you. It was heads. So he won or lost the toss. And then he's like, all right, I'm up. And part of me was like, should I just have stepped up and just done
it? So I'm now going to interrupt and say I'm going to give it to him this afternoon, because It's one thing, Chris, as you said, if you have a shoulder limitation, some sort of limitation, that you can't do it. But at that point, if now you're given the choice, look, I'd love to do this, but I can't do it. Can't do it. If he thought he could get out there and do it, well, then you pay the piper.
I think was there a little bit, Graham?
Pardon?
Was there a little bit of a sense of relief when you lost the toss? Or you were you?
No, like, I wasn't worried. I wasn't worried.
Excitement for what was going to come.
No, I told this to AJ. If it was you, like if it was Lee Versage or Matt Conesvita with the first pitch, I would have been rooting for what happened to happen.
Right.
For AJ, I was like half and half because I was like, man, I know that he's going to take this really hard and think about it for multiple days. So, it wasn't relief, and I knew I could do it. I've played baseball. We practiced. We probably took 20 throws in the parking lot before. And
were
like,
they all bad though from him? The throws in the parking lot?
I think ask him. I want to say 20%. Like, let's say we threw 20 throws, four or five of his were like what you saw on video. The rest were not really to me, but like high. So his plan was I'm gonna airmail it because. He's like, I don't want it to go in the dirt, so I'm just going to launch it. But then the Bose creator went in front of him, and if I were to ballpark age, I'd say around 65, 70, something like that.
Okay.
And fire strike. Perfect strike. So AJ's like, well, I can't throw it over the catcher's head now, and he was in between his decision.
Oh, wow.
So that's his that's what happened. So I spent the rest of the evening buying him beers and trying to inflate his ego because he was not feeling too good.
Chris, look forward to being with you at the park tomorrow.